Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Later in the hour, we will also listen to some of the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on whether to confirm Judge Neil Gorsuch for a seat on the Supreme Court when it gets underway. So twin special coverage here on the Brian Lehrer Show this morning. Former CIA agent Bob Baer is back with us. And Bob, we do hear the politics of this, the twin tracks. Adam Schiff, the ranking Democrat, in his opening remarks, emphasizing the evidence, circumstantial evidence for Trump campaign collusion with Russia during the campaign. And now from the first two members of Congress to get to question James Comey and Mike Rogers, the questioning is focusing on the leaks. So we're hearing the politics of both of these very serious issues and who's emphasizing what, would you say?
Well, I think my opinion is talking about the leaks is a red herring. I mean, it's a diversion of, you know, there's clear collusion between Flynn and the Russian ambassador. I think we all agree on that. He got paid by RT, which is, in essence, an arm of the Kremlin. He took money from a foreign government. There was a quid pro quo, but by bringing up the leak, and by the way, the leak is illegal, of course, and the masking of U.S. citizens is the norm at the National Security Agency. If you read these documents, they just say U.S. person, for instance, talk to the ambassador Kislyak, and then you don't really know who it is. And clearly somebody during the Obama administration found this very alarming and decided to leak it at enormous risk. We don't know who that is. The Republicans, not the Republicans, the alt-right is talking about the deep state, which, of course, doesn't exist. You just have people in the government who, for whatever reason, leak stuff. And I think it really goes back to the FBI investigation and the National Security Agency. What did they pick up in incidental collection on Trump, on the Trump campaign? Very important, the content. And the big news, of course, again, as I said, is the FBI investigation.
And I'm going to jump back in because now it seems like Adam Schiff, the ranking Democrat who presented that prosecutorial case, is getting to question the witnesses. So let's hear how Adam Schiff is going at it.
Inside the FBI, the Department of Justice has asked me to share with you that the answer is the same for the Department of Justice.
James Comey, the FBI director, speaking at this moment.
No information that supports those tweets.
The president accused Mr. Obama and presumably the FBI of engaging in McCarthyism. As you understand the term McCarthyism, do you think President Obama or the FBI was engaged in such conduct?
I'm not going to try and characterize the tweets themselves. All I can tell you is we have no information that supports them.
Were you engaged in McCarthyism, Director Comey?
Try very hard not to engage in any isms of any kind, including McCarthyism.
The president second stated, quote, is it legal for a sitting president to be wiretapping a race for president prior to an election, turned down by a court earlier, a new low, unquote. Director Comey, can you answer the president's question? Would it be legal for President Obama to have ordered a wiretap of Donald Trump?
I'm not going to characterize or respond to the tweets themselves. I can tell you in general, as Admiral Rogers and I were just saying, there is a statutory framework in the United States under which courts grant permission for electronic surveillance, either in a criminal case or a national security case, based on a showing of probable cause, carefully overseen. It's a rigorous, rigorous process that involves all three branches of government, and it's one we've lived with since the late 1970s. That's how it works. So no individual in the United States can direct electronic surveillance of anyone. It has to go through an application process, ask a judge. The judge can then make the order.
So President Obama could not unilaterally order a wiretap of anyone?
No president could.
Mr. Trump also asserted in that tweet that he was that the application or the president's order was turned down by a court. Was there any request made by the FBI or Justice Department to wiretap Donald Trump turned down by a court?
That's one of those subjects I can't comment on one way or another. Please don't interpret that in any way other than I just can't talk about anything that relates to the FISA process in an open setting.
Third, the president stated, I'd bet a good lawyer could make a great case out of the fact that President Obama was tapping my phones in October just prior to the election. Director Comey, you're a good lawyer. Can you make out a great case that President Obama wiretapped Mr. Trump's phones just prior to the election, in light of the fact you have said there's no evidence of that?
All I can say is what I said before, that we don't have any information that supports those tweets.
Well, in my view, then, you would not be a great but a very unethical lawyer to make out such a case. And finally, the president made the following accusation. How low has President Obama gone to tap my phones during the very sacred election process? This is Nixon, Watergate, bad or sick guy. Director Comey, the president has compared Mr. Obama to Nixon and purported wiretap of Trump phones as another Watergate. What was the gravamen of the offense by Nixon and his operatives during Watergate? A lot of people who may be watching may be too young to understand what Watergate was about. What was the gravamen of that offense?
Well, as I recall it, and I was a kid, but I've studied it quite a bit in school, the gravamen of it was an abuse of power, including break-ins, unlawful wiretaps, obstruction of justice, sort of the cycle of criminal conduct.
And it was a break-in of the Democratic headquarters by operatives of the president, was it not?
That's my understanding, is that's how it began, the
and
investigation.
It also
began.
Involved a cover-up by the president.
Yes, as I said.
Now here, I think you've said there's been no evidence of an illegal wiretap by President Obama. Is that right?
I've said the FBI and the Department of Justice have no information to support those tweets.
But there is evidence, is there not, of a break-in of the Democratic headquarters by a foreign power using cyber means?
Yes, there was. As the intelligence community report, the UNCLASS report, said in January, the Russian intelligence services hacked into a number of enterprises in the United States, including the Democratic National Committee.
And there was an effort by the Russians to cover up their break-in of the Democratic Party headquarters by using cutouts like WikiLeaks to publish the stolen material. Isn't that right?
Certainly to cover up that they were the ones releasing it.
Director Rogers, in an effort to explain why there was no evidence supporting the president's claim that Obama had wiretapped him, the president and his spokesman, Sean Spicer, have suggested that British intelligence, through its NSA or GCHQ, wiretapped Mr. Trump on President Obama's behalf. Did you ever request that your counterparts in GCHQ should wiretap Mr. Trump on behalf of President Obama?
No, sir, nor would I. That would be expressly against the construct of the Five Eyes agreement that's been in place for decades.
And the Five Eyes are some of our closest intelligence partners, and Britain is one of them.
Yes, sir.
Have you seen any evidence that anyone else in the Obama administration made such a request?
No, sir. And again, my view is the same as Director Comey. I've seen nothing on the NSA side that we engaged in any such activity, nor that anyone ever asked us to engage in such activity.
And if you were to ask the British to spy on America, that would be a violation of U.S. law, would it not?
Yes, sir.
Our relationship with British intelligence is one of the closest we have with any foreign services. Isn't that true?
Yes, sir.
Now, our British allies have called the president's suggestion that they wiretapped him for Obama nonsense and utterly ridiculous. Would you agree?
Yes, sir.
Does it do damage to our relationship with one of our closest intelligence partners for the president to make a baseless claim that the British participated in a conspiracy against him?
I think it clearly frustrates a key ally of ours.
Certainly wouldn't endear the British intelligence services to continue working with us, would it?
I believe that the relationship is strong enough. This is something we'll be able to deal with.
But it's not helpful, you
yes,
would
sir.
Agree.
Director
Rogers, President Trump recently met with German Chancellor Angela Merkel. During a joint press conference, the president suggested that they both had something in common, that they had both been wiretapped by President Obama. Director Comey has just demonstrated why the claims by the president about his being wiretapped by Obama were unsupported by any evidence. But the claim he made about wiretapping directed at Merkel referred to something that came up in the context of the Snowden disclosures. I'm not going to ask you to comment on whether the chancellor was the subject of any eavesdropping, But I would like to ask you whether the Snowden disclosures did damage to our relationship with our German ally, and whether the Chancellor herself expressed her concern at the time.
Yes, sir.
In light of this, is it helpful to our relationship with the Chancellor or our relationship with German intelligence to bring this up again in a public forum?
It certainly complicates things, but again, I'd like to think that our relationship is such we're going to be able to deal and keep moving forward.
So our relationships with the British and the Germans, you hope, are strong enough to withstand any damage done by these comments?
By anything in general, sir. We have foundational interests with each other. We need to keep working together.
This time, Director Comey, let me ask you a few questions you may or may not be able to answer. Do you know who Roger Stone is?
Generally, yes.
Are you aware that he was a partner of Paul Manafort?
You know, Mr. Schiff, I'm worried we're going to a place I don't want to go, which is commenting on any particular person. And so I don't think I should comment. I'm aware of public accounts, but I don't want to talk more than that.
Are you aware that he has publicly acknowledged having directly communicated with Guccifer II, someone that the intelligence community has assessed was a persona of Russian intelligence?
I've read media accounts to that effect. I don't want to hurt anybody's feeling in the media. I don't know whether that's accurate or not.
If Mr. Stone acknowledged that Mr. Podesta's time in the barrel was coming in August of 2016, would that have been prior to the public release of stolen emails of Mr. Podesta's?
I believe that's the correct chronology.
Do you know how Mr. Stone would have known that Mr. Podesta's emails were going to be released?
It's not something I can comment on.
Do you know that Mr. Podesta has said that at the time he was not even aware of whether his emails had been stolen and would be published?
It's not something I can comment on.
At this point, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to yield to Mr. Himes.
Thank you to the ranking member and gentlemen. Thank you
this
for being with us.
This is Democratic Congressman Jim Himes now from our area, Southwest Connecticut.
Let me start with a point that the chairman brought out, I think, very specifically, which is that there's no evidence that votes were technically changed in any of the jurisdictions that he named. Admiral Rogers, thanks for confirming that. Am I correct that when we say Russian hacking, what we are referring to is the fact that the intelligence community believes that the Russians penetrated the networks of the DNC, of John Podesta and other individuals, stole information, and then disseminated that information? Is that a fair characterization of the conclusions of the intelligence community?
Yes, sir.
And did the intelligence community ever do an analysis as to whether the dissemination of that adverse information in a closely fought election had any effect on the American electorate?
No, sir. The U.S. intelligence community does not do assessments of
U.S. policy
or U.S. opinion.
That's not your job.
Yes, sir.
In fact, as those of us who go through campaigns know, that's actually something we probably have a little bit more understanding of. Let me just ask this question then. Was there any equivalent dissemination of adverse information stolen from the RNC or individuals associated with the Trump campaign?
No.
Thank you. Director Comey, in the remaining minutes here, I appreciate your frankness on the topic of an ongoing investigation and appreciate your inability to go too much further than you went. But I do want to ask you a question to try to clear up some confusion. This committee, of course, is engaged in an investigation about links, as you said, between the Trump campaign and the Russians, should there be any possible collusion. We've had a number of statements very early in the investigation that there was no evidence of collusion. This is still very early in our investigation. Is it fair to say that you're still relatively early in your investigation?
It's hard to say because I don't know how much longer it will take, but we've been doing this. This investigation began in late July, so for a counterintelligence investigation, that's a fairly short period of time.
So you use the word coordination, which to me suggests that you are in fact investigating whether there was coordination between U.S. persons and the Russians. Is it fair for me to assume that we shouldn't simply dismiss the possibility that there was coordination or collusion between the Russian efforts and U.S. persons as an investigatory body?
All I can tell you is what we're investigating, which includes whether there was any coordination between people associated with the Trump campaign and the Russians.
Okay, thank you. I'll yield the remaining time to the ranking member.
I will yield the remaining time this period to Representative Sewell.
Thank you. So with respect to the coordination, Director Comey, I just wanted to continue this line of questioning.
Another Democratic member here, Terry Sewell from Alabama.
Coordination or contacts you're looking at in your investigation generally when confronted with something like this?
I can't.
Can you discuss whether or not there was any knowledge by any Trump-related person and the Russians?
I can't.
So with respect to any ongoing investigation, whether the specificity of the person, U.S. person or otherwise, you can't comment on any of that?
Correct.
Okay. Can you characterize what the nature of your investigation generally, when you do an investigation of this sort, can you talk a little bit about the process generally?
Not a whole lot. I can tell you we use our great, great people. We coordinate with our brothers and sisters.
And as FBI Director James Comey goes through a series of things that he cannot comment on, let's take a minute and talk about what we just heard in the previous lines of questioning. Back with us is former CIA field officer Bob Baer. Bob, Comey pretty directly demolished Donald Trump's tweets about Obama surveilling Trump Tower, and maybe even more emotionally about Obama getting the British to do it for him.
Well, that's something else that was for me as a former intelligence officer was clear. The process of getting a FISA, whether it's on a landline or intercepting calls, is just horrendous. There's no way around it. There's no record of a FISA. They may have wondered.
When you say about a FISA, no record of a FISA, what do you mean by a FISA?
It's a warrant request to tap a line. It's sort of like search and seizure, or getting into somebody's house, anything like that. It's probably more rigorous than the police face. It's impossible to get up and to do it illegally without a warrant, without a FISA. You would need 40 or 50 people in the FBI or the National Security Agency to agree to break the law, and the penalties are just enormous for an illegal telephone tap. And getting GCHQ, they brought this up.
That's the British Intelligence Service?
The National Security Agency. They do the taps. Is impossible. Anybody who's ever worked with them, there's no way it would go to the Prime Minister's office, and there's no way the British Prime Minister would agree to do an illegal tap on Trump Tower ever. If you know the process, you know it's impossible. Now, people that believe in the deep state and the alt-right will just say there's a collusion among intelligence officials to get this done. Is it to leak it? But it's just, that's a conspiracy theory that doesn't hold water.
Let me play a little tape from the other day to this point and get your comment on it. This was when a German reporter asked Trump in his joint news conference with German Chancellor Angela Merkel about Sean Spicer referencing a Fox News commentary that maybe President Obama asked British intelligence to spy on the Trump campaign so Obama's fingerprints wouldn't be on it. This is Trump.
All we did was quote a certain very talented legal mind who was the one responsible for saying that on television. I didn't make an opinion on it. That was a statement made by a very talented lawyer on Fox, and so you shouldn't be talking to me. You should be talking to Fox.
That, quote, very talented lawyer on Fox is their, as I understand it, chief legal analyst, Judge Andrew Napolitano. But that Trump comment drew this really remarkable and definitive rebuke from Fox News. Here is Fox News anchor Shepard Smith on the air.
Do we know of anybody else other than Mike Flynn who was swept up in this?
Well, you're right to point that out, because the one crime we know that's been committed is that one, the leaking of someone's name through the FISA system.
Sorry. Now we have that Shepard Smith clip.
Judge Andrew Napolitano commented on the morning show Fox and Friends that he has sources who say British intelligence was involved in surveillance at Trump Tower. Our White House team will have much more on that from the White House in just a moment. Fox News cannot confirm Judge Napolitano's commentary. Fox News knows of no evidence of any kind that the now President of the United States was surveilled at any time in any way. Full stop.
Full stop. That was pretty remarkable, Bob Baer. Are you familiar with Judge Napolitano? I don't know if he keeps his job as a Fox News analyst, chief legal analyst after this, but any idea where he may have gotten that information, quote-unquote information?
Well, I know some of the people he sourced. It's come out in the New York Times, and they're not reliable. Access to that information of a tap using GCHQ would be so limited. This is just made up. I mean, this is in the blogosphere. The real crime here, and well, maybe it's not a crime, is that the president is taking Fox News, a contributor, as a source. I'm a contributor to CNN, but Lord, I hope nobody, takes me as a definitive source on any of this. I don't work for the government. I just have opinions. The fact that he is simply turning to a contributor at Fox, somebody I would characterize as in the alt-right, and using that as a source is quite remarkable. It's never happened in this country before, ever.
So now we have James Comey officially weighing in under oath in this hearing. Here's a question from a listener. Can you discuss the hair-splitting definitions of collusion versus coordination in the Comey hearing? That, of course, would be collusion or coordination by the Trump campaign with the Russian hacking. Did you hear those two words used in hair-splittingly different ways?
I just sort of disregard that. I mean, if you look at Adam Schiff's statement, opening statement, what he said later, and about Roger Stone working with Manafort in the Ukraine, we're talking about collusion. Manafort has been accused of taking Russian money, Russian intelligence money. He ends up on the Trump campaign. Carter Page cuts himself into a deal with Rosneft, which is essentially a state organization, a state company. There's just evidence all over the field, red flags. And the FBI director at this point, very rightly in the middle of investigation, simply cannot confirm whether Carter Page got Russian government money or Manafort. It's something you actually need the documents. You need bank transfers. You need and the rest of it. Good evidence.
Bob Baer, thank you so much for your knowledge today and your insights. We'll take a break and go back into the hearing. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and today we're devoting our program to special coverage of the House Intelligence Committee hearing on Russian meddling in the 2016 election and the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on whether to confirm Judge Neil Gorsuch for a seat on the Supreme Court. I want to tell you that you have some choices, folks. We are also streaming both hearings live on our website. And as we turn to Gorsuch now, if you want to continue listening to the Russia and surveillance hearing, you can go to WNYC.org and pick up that stream. But let's go live to the Gorsuch hearing. Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat from California, is speaking.
And whether states and localities will be able to pass laws and make it harder for poor people, people of color, seniors, and younger people to vote. It is the Supreme Court that will have final word on whether corporations will be able to pollute our air and water with impunity, or whether the NRA and other extreme organizations will be able to block common sense gun regulations, including those that keep military-style assault weapons off our streets. And it is the Supreme Court that will have the ultimate say on whether employers will be held accountable for discriminating against workers or failing to protect workers when they're harmed or killed on the job. For example, last year, Judge Gorsuch sat on a case that involved a truck driver who was stranded in the freezing cold for several hours after his trailer's brakes froze. He had no heat. In fact, it was so cold that the driver was having trouble breathing. His torso was numb, and he could not feel his feet. Despite this, his employer directed him to wait for a repairman or else drive both the truck and the trailer. When no one came, the driver unhitched the trailer to search for assistance. Because driving with frozen brakes with a fully loaded trailer would have been too dangerous. A week later, he was fired. After hearing the case, the administrative law judge ruled that firing the driver was a violation of the health and safety law intended to protect workers. The United States Department of Labor's Administrative Review Board and the Tenth Circuit agreed. Judge Gorsuch dissented and sided with the company. In another case, Judge Gorsuch wrote a separate opinion, this time to challenge a long-standing legal doctrine that allows agencies to write regulations necessary to effectively implement the laws that Congress passes and the President signs. It's called the Chevron Doctrine. This legal doctrine has been fundamental to how our government addresses real-world challenges in our country and has been in place for decades. If overturned, as Judge Gorsuch has advocated, legislating rules are very difficult. In fact, Congress relies on agency experts to write the specific rules, regulations, guidelines, and procedures necessary to carry out laws we enact. These are what ensure the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act to protect our environment from pollution. They are the specific protections put in place by the FDA and the Agricultural Department that safeguard the health and safety of our food supply, our water, our medicines, and they are the details needed to support the infrastructure of our communities, our roads, highways, bridges, dams, and airports. We in Congress rely on the scientists, biologists, economists, engineers, and other experts to help ensure our laws are effectively implemented. For example, even though Dodd-Frank was passed nearly 7 years ago to combat the rampant abuse that led to our country's worst financial crisis since the Great Depression, it still requires over 100 regulations to be implemented by the Securities and Exchange Commission, the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, and other regulators in order to reach its full effectiveness as intended by Congress when it was passed. Judge Gorsuch's position, were it to be adopted, would take away agencies' authorities to address these necessary details. Such a change in law would dramatically affect how laws passed by Congress can be properly carried out. 2 weeks ago, The Washington Post ran an op-ed written by a woman who desperately wanted to have a baby. She described how she and her husband went to great lengths for 4 years trying to get pregnant and were thrilled when they finally succeeded. Tragically, after her 21-week checkup, they discovered her daughter had multicystic dysplastic kidney disease. They were told by three separate doctors that her condition was 100% fatal and that the risk to the mother was sevenfold if she carried her pregnancy to term. The mother described their excruciating decision and the unforgiving process the couple endured to get the medical care they needed. The debate over Roe v. Wade and the right to privacy, ladies and gentlemen, is not theoretical. In 1973, the court recognized a woman's fundamental and constitutional right to privacy. That right guarantees her access to reproductive health care. In fact, the Supreme Court has repeatedly upheld Roe's core finding, making it settled law for the last 44 years. I ask unanimous consent, Mr. Chairman, to enter into the record the 14 key cases where the Supreme Court upheld Roe's core holding and the total 39 decisions where it has been reaffirmed by the court.
Without objection, it is included.
Thank you. If these judgments, when combined, do not constitute super precedent, I don't know what does. Importantly, the dozens of cases affirming Roe are not only about precedent, they are also about a woman's fundamental and constitutional rights. Roe ensured that women and their doctors will decide what's best for their care, not politicians. President Trump repeatedly promised that his judicial nominees would be pro-life and, quote, automatically, end quote, overturn Roe v. Wade. Judge Gorsuch has not had occasion to rule directly on a case involving Roe. However, his writings do raise questions. Specifically, he wrote that he believes there are no exceptions to the principle that, quote, the intentional taking of a human life by private persons is always wrong, end quote. This language has been interpreted by both pro-life and pro-choice organizations to mean he would overturn Roe. The Supreme Court is also expected to decide what kind of reasonable regulation states...
All right, we're going to switch hearings now because Adam Schiff, the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, is questioning the FBI director and the NSA director about Trump advisor Roger Stone contacts with Russia during the campaign. Let's listen.
Same answer.
Are you aware that Mr. Stone also claimed that he was in touch with an intermediary of Mr. Assange?
Same answer.
This question I think you can answer. Do you know whether the Russian intelligence services dealt directly with WikiLeaks or whether they too used an intermediary?
We assessed they used some kind of cutout. They didn't deal directly with WikiLeaks, in contrast to DC Leaks and Guccifer 2.0.
In early October, are you aware that Mr. Stone tweeted, "I have total confidence that my hero Julian Assange will educate the American people soon"? Are you aware of that tweet?
I'm back to my original same answer.
And are you aware that it was only days later that WikiLeaks released the Podesta emails?
Same answer.
I'm going to yield now to Mr. Himes.
Thank you, Mr. Schiff. I note that we're going through the 90-minute mark in this hearing. So
again, Democratic Congressman Jim Himes of California, of Connecticut, forgive me, right here in our listening area, Southwest Connecticut, Jim Himes.
I get no argument from this side on the importance of investigating, prosecuting leaks. Leaks are a threat to our national security, whether they're perpetrated by Edward Snowden, whether they're perpetrated by people outside the White House, or perhaps, as we have seen in the last 60 days, maybe from people inside the White House. But, Mr. Comey, if I can use your phrase, intense public interest, there is intense public interest in the fact that our new president will attack anyone and everyone. He will attack the cast of Hamilton. He will attack Chuck Schumer. He will attack our allies, Mexico, Australia, Germany. He will attack the intelligence community which you lead, associating you with McCarthyism and with Nazism. But there's one person and one country which is immune, which is inoculated from any form of presidential attack, no matter what the behavior, no matter if there's a violation of the INF nuclear treaty, no matter if Vladimir Putin kills political opponents, the new president defends obfuscates, does not attack. And the people around the president, Michael Flynn, Jeff Sessions, Carter Page, Paul Manafort, have an odd connection to Russia, a series of odd connections. We all campaign. I don't think any of our campaign people have connections with a foreign power, much less one that is an adversary of the United States. And further, apart from these weird links, without exception, the individuals I quoted have dissembled or misled, maybe even lied about the nature of those connections until the political pressure has gotten to a point where they have been fired or recused in the case of the Attorney General. So I want to look briefly at one of these individuals. And Director Comey, I understand your constraints, but let me ask a couple of questions regardless. Paul Manafort, who is Roger Stone's business partner and former and Trump's former campaign manager, I want to ask a few questions about him. First, Director Comey, can you tell me what the Foreign Agents Registration Act is?
Sure. Not in an expert way, but it's a statute that requires people who are acting as agents of a non-U.S. government to register with the United States.
Right. So the National Security Division of the Department of Justice writes, this is their manual, the purpose of FARA, as it is known, is to ensure that the U.S. government and the people of the United States are informed of the source of information and the identity of persons attempting to influence U.S. public opinion, policy, and laws, unquote. Would you agree that guarding against foreign espionage or foreign influence measures falls under this heading?
Yes.
In general, is willful violation or failure to register pursuant to this law in some circumstances a crime?
I believe it is. I'm not an expert on FARA, but I believe it is.
And it could lead certainly to counterintelligence concerns, right?
Yes.
Now, Paul Manafort, as reported in the New York Times and other outlets, and his deputy Rick Gates ran a campaign in Washington to lobby government officials and push positive press coverage of pro-Russian Ukrainian officials. Paul Manafort began officially working for former Ukrainian President Yanukovych at least as far back as 2007, according to the Washington Post. The lobbying was only discovered by Ukraine's new National Anti-Corruption Bureau, which found secret ledgers in Kiev indicating almost $13 million in undisclosed cash payments from Ukrainian government coffers to Paul Manafort for lobbying done between 2007 and 2012 for Mr. Yanukovych. Director Comey, did Paul Manafort ever register as a foreign agent under FARA?
That's not something I can comment on.
Whether he registered or not is not something that you can comment on?
No.
Okay. Paul Manafort was, however, Donald Trump's campaign manager in July of 2016, correct?
Mr. Himes, I really don't want to get into answering questions about any individual U.S. person. So,
okay.
It's obvious from the public record, but I don't want to start down the road of answering questions about somebody.
Okay. Well, I think the facts would show that he never did register. But as the ranking member pointed out, it perhaps should come as no surprise that the Republican platform, which was drafted at the Republican convention in July of 2016, underwent a pretty significant change with respect to the American response to Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine and their aggression in that country. It appears, from our standpoint, that we had perhaps somebody who should have registered under FARA pulling the strings there. There's more, though, and I don't know how much you'll be able to comment on this, but I want to just explore for a second the nature of the Russian government, because oftentimes the question becomes, was there contact with Russian officials? And I want to read you a brief quote from a book on Putin's government. This is by Professor Karen Dawisha, who wrote, "Instead of seeing Russian politics as an inchoate democratic system being pulled down by history, accidental autocrats, popular inertia, bureaucratic incompetence, or poor Western advice, I conclude that from the beginning, Putin and his circle sought to create an authoritarian regime ruled by a close-knit cabal who used democracy for decoration rather than direction." Mr. Comey, is it fair to say that the line that exists in the United States between government officers and government officials is blurred in Russia, that there may be oligarchs or other individuals who on the surface appear to be private citizens but who have connections to this close-knit cabal, who might be agents of influence or might be doing the Kremlin's bidding in contact with others.
That's fair to say, and one of our counterintelligence missions is to try to understand who are those people and are they acting on behalf of the Russian government, those Russian citizens.
Is it generally true that there is a category of Russian oligarchs that are likely part of this close-knit cabal?
In a general sense.
And if they go way back with Vladimir Putin, do the chances increase that they might be connected with the KGB, as is asserted by Professor Dawisha?
The longevity of the association can be a consideration.
And the KGB was the Russian intelligence service under the Soviet Union, right?
Correct.
And the Ukraine was part of the Soviet Union?
Correct.
I'll just observe, Rinat Akhmetov, a steel and iron ore magnate, or oligarch, is the richest man in Ukraine and a strong Putin ally. He was the one who reportedly recommended Paul Manafort to Yanukovych. Mr. Comey, last set of questions for me. I have a report that appeared in CNN yesterday. The headline is, former Trump campaign chief Paul Manafort wanted for questioning in Ukraine corruption case. And I raise this with you because the story is told of Paul Manafort acting on behalf of Ukraine's former justice minister, Oleksandr Lavrinovich, who was the justice minister under the previous pro-Russian regime, who, and I'll just read a segment from this story here, who was involved in jailing the former prime minister, Tymoshenko, who was the main political rival of the Kremlin-backed President Viktor Yanukovych, whom Manafort advised until he was deposed in 2014. Tymoshenko was released from jail at the same time that Yanukovych was ousted. Many saw her sentencing as politically motivated by the pro-Russian government. In response to the deteriorating international climate, Ukrainian prosecutors say Manafort drafted a public relations strategy that included hiring Skadden Arps, an American law firm, to review the Tymoshenko case and show the conviction had a sound legal basis. The story goes on to talk about the transfer of over $1 million, potentially illegally, from Ukrainian coffers to Skadden Arps. And the reason I bring all this up with you is because the story also says, and it appears to have been confirmed by the Department of Justice, that the current Ukraine regime, hardly a friend of the Russians and very much targeted by the Russians, has made 7 requests to the United States government, for assistance under the MLA treaty in securing the assistance of Paul Manafort as part of this anti-corruption case. And in fact, the story says that you were presented personally with a letter asking for that assistance. So my question, Director Comey, is that all true? Have you been asked to provide assistance to the current Ukrainian government with respect to Paul Manafort? And how do you intend to respond to that request?
That's not something I can comment on. I can say generally we have a very strong relationship and cooperation in the criminal and national security areas with our Ukrainian partners. But I can't talk about the particular matter.
The story says that the DOJ confirmed that there have been requests for assistance on this matter. You can't go as far as confirming that, in fact, there have been these requests made?
If they've done that, I would need them to do it again. I can't comment on it.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. And with that, I will yield back the remainder of my time to the ranking member.
That was Connecticut Congressman Democrat Jim Himes from Southwest Connecticut, questioning FBI Director James Comey and NSA Director Admiral Michael Rogers in the hearing about Russian meddling in the 2016 election. Today we're devoting the Brian Lehrer Show to special coverage of that hearing and also the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on whether to confirm Judge Neil Gorsuch for a seat on the Supreme Court. That hearing is just getting underway. Now, listeners, you have some choices for our remaining 15 minutes together and then on through the day. We are also streaming both hearings live on our website. So if you want to hear the Gorsuch hearing, you can go to WNYC.org. If you want to hear the continuation of the Intelligence Committee hearing, you can go to WNYC.org. We have separate streams if you don't want to hear the little recap I'm going to do of some headlines now, and then the conversation that we have coming up with Jeffrey Rosen about both of these things. We got headlines today, if you haven't been listening this morning, from the Russian hacking hearing, such as the first public acknowledgement from FBI Director James Comey that there is a formal FBI investigation into not just the Russian hacking itself, but also into possible Trump campaign collusion. That is now a publicly acknowledged official investigation for the first time. And in response to the Trump tweets alleging Obama wiretaps or other surveillance of Trump Tower during the campaign, we heard FBI Director Comey say there was no such wiretap or surveillance, nor did the British intelligence agencies do anything like that on behalf of Obama. He really left Trump and Sean Spicer way out in no man's land on that one for their claims. And this is interesting because if Trump released those tweets to distract the media from collusion with Russia questions, it seems to have become instead his most self-damaging fake fact. So we have this hearing with a lot of evidence of Trump campaign officials entangled with Russia in a variety of ways during the campaign and in some unsavory ways, as we were just hearing in that line of questioning. And we have the FBI director unambiguously refuting the Trump Tower wiretapping or surveillance by Obama claim. What they don't have, what we haven't heard this morning, to be fair, is direct evidence so far of the Trump campaign colluding on the actual hacks of John Podesta's or Democratic National Committee emails. So we will see what continues to emerge from that. The investigation, we know, though, by the FBI into that is not over. Comey said as much, that the investigation began in July and is ongoing. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we're devoting the program today to special coverage of the House Intelligence Committee hearing on Russian meddling in the 2016 election and the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on whether to confirm Judge Neil Gorsuch for a seat on the Supreme Court. With me now to talk about primarily the Supreme Court hearing is Jeffrey Rosen, president of the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia and a law professor at the George Washington University School of Law. He's a contributing editor for The Atlantic and author of books, including his latest, Louis D. Brandeis, American Prophet, about Justice Brandeis. Jeffrey, thanks for giving us a few minutes. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be back.
So as they're doing their opening statements in the Senate Judiciary Committee, we took a little bit of the ranking Democrat, Dianne Feinstein, earlier in the hour. Anything that you would categorize as news from this so far?
Well, the thing to look for in the opening statements is how ambivalent Democrats will be and how ready they are to signal their willingness to vote for him. Many haven't decided yet, and they're going to wait to see how the testimony progresses. Some of the opening statements will basically signal, you can persuade me if you can show that you're willing to stand up to President Trump. I'm concerned about your supposed pro-business orientation. And many of them are going to try to make it a referendum on the constitutional legacy of Justice Scalia. And we may be seeing some wonderful constitutional wonkery. My law professor heart is leaping, as well as an opportunity for civic education, because I think a lot of the Democratic senators are really going to say, hey, Justice Scalia said that he was devoted to the original understanding of the Constitution, but in all of these cases, he betrayed his principles by ignoring constitutional text and history. How do you, Judge Gorsuch, differ from him, and what's your position on originalism? So it's sort of standard to dismiss these hearings as kabuki theater and say they're just not substantive, but that's not my experience. If you go back and read the transcripts of past confirmation hearings, which I, as a constitutional wonk, I love to do, there are just these beautiful clarifying moments, like when Howard Metzenbaum was questioning Justice Breyer about his views on antitrust and predicted that although he was a Democrat, he would be pro-corporation. That proved to be right on the court, and Justice Breyer has indeed joined the conservative wing of the court on antitrust. So I would just encourage listeners, especially tomorrow when Judge Gorsuch testifies on Wednesday, to stick with it, dig in, read the transcript later if you can't watch the whole thing, but realize that there's an awful lot of constitutional substance that's going to emerge.
You have an article on The Atlantic called "A Supreme Court Nominee Alert to the Dangers of Big Business." And I was surprised to see that article come out, because this seems to be the Democrats' main rhetorical tack against him right now. Here is 16 seconds of Senator Chuck Schumer.
Judge Gorsuch may act like a neutral, calm judge, but when it comes time to rule, far too often he sides with the powerful few over everyday Americans trying to just get a fair shake.
So does Chuck Schumer know a different Neil Gorsuch than you do?
I think he does. I've been very alert to the pro-business tendencies of the Roberts Court and have written about it for a long time. But I've been struck that it's shared by both Democratic and Republican justices. Basically, there are no populists on the Roberts Court like Justice Louis Brandeis, who denounced the curse of bigness in business and government. So I decided to dig into Neil Gorsuch's antitrust record, which is really the most clarifying way of seeing what he thinks the limits of business are, and found to my surprise that he was actually far more pragmatic and pro-individual and small business than Justice Scalia was. And he has a huge background in antitrust. He actually won what was at the time the largest antitrust verdict in American history, more than $1 billion against American Tobacco. As a litigator, he's taught antitrust, and his antitrust opinions show much more nuance, attention to facts, and focus on predatory behavior and on promoting competition than Justice Scalia and a lot of the Chicago school conservatives who focus merely on economic efficiency and consumer welfare. So it's a very wonky piece, but I learned a lot just digging into it. And I do believe, in the end, that although Judge Gorsuch is unlikely to be an economic populist on the court, none of the justices are, he could actually move the court a bit to the left on antitrust and be more pragmatic than his predecessor.
Huh. And your biography of Justice Brandeis, Louis D. Brandeis, American Prophet, focuses on bigness to some degree. And I see you're giving a talk later today called "The Curse of Bigness: What Would Brandeis Say About Privacy in the Age of Google and Facebook?" Are Google and Facebook possible topics of antitrust lawsuits? I think that's a thing in Europe. Is it a thing here too, and something that might come up for Gorsuch?
It's a really good question. Google and Facebook, of course, are not bound by the First Amendment because they're private companies, not the government. They are, in theory, liable to antitrust suits, although the standards for antitrust are kind of hard to meet. So I don't think it's going to come up in the Gorsuch hearings, but people who want to tame the power of Facebook and Google emphasize that breaking them up might be a Brandeisian solution to prevent them from using their monopoly power in some areas to suppress speech and privacy.
Also, privacy is the implied right in the Constitution on which the Roe versus Wade abortion rights ruling was made. And in the stretch that we took live a little while ago of Senator Feinstein's opening statement, she was going on about Roe versus Wade as how it should be seen as super precedent at this point, settled law. Did Brandeis knowingly or unknowingly lay the groundwork like 100 years ago for Roe versus Wade?
He didn't. He was the most important justice in shaping our modern conception of electronic surveillance and the ability of citizens not to be searched by the government. But the notion of privacy as autonomy, which was the core of Roe, didn't arise until the 1960s in the Griswold contraception case. And that's rooted not in the Fourth Amendment right against unreasonable searches and seizures, but in the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. So it's hard to know what Brandeis would have thought about the right to choose abortion, although he certainly cared a lot about, at least in his earlier incarnation, about dignity and about the ability of citizens to control the expression of their thoughts, sensations, and emotions. And of course, autonomy will be central to the Gorsuch hearings because everyone wants to know properly whether or not he'll overturn Roe. His book about assisted suicide very clearly and boldly says that the right to life is fundamental and should not be deprived under any circumstances. He says that's just moral speculation about natural law theory. And the Democrats will want to know what are the constitutional implications for Roe. And he, you know, he's certainly likely to dodge those questions, but it's deeply interesting to try to speculate.
And we just have like 30 seconds left, but maybe the most important question to ask about Gorsuch right now is about his views of presidential power vis-a-vis his own court as it relates to the six-country temporary travel ban, for example, and generally the power of the court to prevent against creeping authoritarianism. Do you expect the Democrats to focus on this? Is this going to be the headline?
Yes, it will be the headline. And I was really struck to see Senator Grassley, the Republican, in his opening statement say, "I'm glad to see that my Democratic colleagues are now concerned about executive overreach. We Republicans didn't like it under Obama, and we agree that the court should check presidential executive orders." So the Democrats will be all over that. Gorsuch won't say what he thinks about the travel ban because the case might come before him. But I think he will say very clearly, yes, I am ready to check President Trump if I believe that he's exceeded his executive authority.
Jeffrey Rosen, law professor at George Washington University Law School and president of the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Brian. Pleasure.
And listeners, you now have a choice. You really have three choices. You can stay here and listen to the Leonard Lopate Show with MSNBC's Chris Hayes among his guests. We are also streaming both hearings live on our website, so you can listen to the Gorsuch hearing in the Senate Judiciary Committee or the James Comey, Admiral Michael Rogers hearing in the House Intelligence Committee on Russia and all of that. At WNYC.org, we have both streams. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, thank you for listening to us this morning.